Welcome to Capital Conversations by the Venture Asset Management Initiative, produced by IMD, your go-to podcast to understanding the dynamics in venture capital. In this new episode, we explore the craft of fund sizing and modeling with Daniel Kuiper-Noor. This conversation is split into two parts. This is part one. Daniel is co-founding partner at the VC firm Speed Invest, based in Vienna, Austria, with total assets under management exceeding 1 billion euros. With offices in Berlin, London, Munich, Paris, and Vienna, Speed Invest focuses its early stage investments in six dedicated vertical teams: deep tech, fintech, health and biotech, marketplaces and consumer, climate and industrial tech, and SaaS and infrastructure. In an era of extended private market cycles, waning IPO activity, and intensifying competition amongst VCs, together with Daniel, we delve into how VC fund managers can strike the delicate balance between fund size, investment strategy, and portfolio construction to maximize returns while adapting to unpredictable market dynamics. Optimal fund size is influenced by the manager's confidence in raising capital and the stage of investment targeted. Early stage funds tend to be smaller with higher return expectations, while later stage funds are typically larger with more mitigated risk. Fund size also correlates with the ability to scale returns, though exceptions exist at both ends.
Optimal fund size is clearly the question you would ask yourself at the very beginning of the VC project. There is many factors playing into this and that the GP or the GP team needs to take into consideration. One obviously would be, how much am I confident to actually raise? So normally it's not surprising if you look into the industry, the first funds are typically the smallest in the portfolio of a manager. That was the same in our case. Our first fund 14 years back was considerably smaller than any of the pursuing funds. So element one is, how much are you confident to raise? Because eventually you want to get the raise closed and get out into the market and eventually building the portfolio and start creating value. That is one thing. The other point is, how big a fund makes sense in the context of the stage you're aiming to invest in. So this is clearly different from a pre-seed, seed, Series A, Series B, in opposition to anything beyond Series B, C, and D. So the early stage of venture is very different from the late stage of venture. Typically, early stage funds tend to be smaller, while later stage funds tend to be bigger. But there is always exceptions, but this is the stage that you're looking to invest is a very important factor on deciding on the optimal fund size. Obviously, because with the stage you go, the return expectations. So the earlier you go, the bigger the return expectations are, and the later you go, the lower they are. Why? Because the later you invest, the more risk is already mitigated. And the bigger the risk an investor takes, the higher must be the expected outcome. Smaller funds tend to be easier to multiply than bigger funds. But there is no clear rule out there that a first-time seed fund must be small and a repeat-time late-stage fund must be big. There is examples for both and the opposite.
Fund size impacts budget, driving operations, and deal flow. Larger funds offer more flexibility through bigger fees. Seed stage funds require more manual effort and hands-on involvement to mitigate risks, while later stage funds focus more on capital provision.
The size of the fund determines your budget. So AUM determines the fee, the annual fee you're allowed to charge the fund. The fees build the budget with which you can pay your team, pay your operations, all the expenses. So all OPEX is covered by the fees. The bigger the fund, the bigger the fees. Maybe not in percentage points, but definitely in absolute dollar terms. So the more budget you have at hand, the more you can do. The workload between a seed fund and a later stage fund, and speaking from Speed Invest's perspective, we are always looking at things from the seed stage perspective. So this is important for the listeners to put into context. The answers for a late stage fund might differ from this. The seed stage is what we do for 14 years now. And in seed stage, generating deal flow to create your investment universe is actually a lot of manual work. This is simply due to the fact that pre-seed companies typically are not very visible, to not visible at all. So the fund need to create a reputation and a position and a brand in the market to be regarded as the go-to fund once a founder finally decides to create a company. And this brand building simply costs money. Not only money, but also a lot of money. Then in the early stages, the work with the companies is a much more intense than in the later stages. Typically, simply by all the risk that is still baked in into those models. First, you need to take out the founder market risk. Then you need to mitigate the product market risk. Then you need to mitigate the channel market risk. Only towards the later stage, it goes into more execution risk. This is when the management in the companies is actually doing most to all of the work, and the investors and the funds are simply providing the required capital to keep the company going. Whereas compared to in the very early stages, there is a lot of effort to put in those companies which are not capital-related efforts.
Smaller funds often yield higher multiples, while larger funds deliver larger total returns. Balancing fund size with performance requires aligning expectations with investment stage and scale.
So generally speaking, venture capital, it's not called venture without a reason. This is the asset class with the perceived highest risk, and according to it, one may expect the highest returns. But still within venture, there's a big difference between, again, early stage venture, seed stage venture, and later stage and growth stage venture. Obviously, small funds are probably in multiple terms easier to perform than bigger funds who may produce lesser multiple, but simply by the fact there is more capital involved. So they just return a bigger sum of capital. So our first fund, a 10 million fund, make this a 5x, this is 50 million back. Our third fund is a 350 million fund, make this a 3x and it's a billion back. So the multiple is not as good as in seed stage, but the cash outcome is tenfold. So there is clearly size, stage, and performance expectations, they correlate. There is no right or wrong. It's just you need to come with the right setup and the right expectations for whatever stage and investment model you choose.
An iterative approach allows VC funds to adapt to long-term marketing cycles. Adjustments over multiple funds can align with market growth, but trying to time the market within a single fund is impractical.
What the whole industry has learned over the past 24 months, when we look back now from Q2 2024 into the spring of 2022, all markets go in cycles. So does the venture market. The cycle before, or the bull market before, was artificially prolonged. The cycle was actually, or the macroeconomic cycle was already over during 2019. It only got a COVID extension. So adapting to market cycles, that's a bit of a dangerous thing, I think, because it could tempt you to react to micro changes in the market, and that would inevitably lead to trying to time the market. And this is, to our firm belief, absolutely impossible. As markets go in cycles, when you try to time the market, you are always late. And public markets are already difficult to time, but these are markets where you can enter and exit with the click of a button. Private markets, enter and exit is always a negotiation, and often by contract not provided, plus come with venture in specifically those super long feedback loops. Until a company in our portfolio is really successful and grows to the size that it eventually is in the position to return the fund, we might see 8, 9, 10 years pass. So with these super long feedback loops, plus that characteristics of private market, that entering and exiting single positions or fund positions is a difficult and in some cases just not possible, having an iterative approach to portfolio construction is a difficult thing. So definitely not within one fund generation. This, I think, one should not do. Going with the market growth over time, speaking in 2, 3, 4 fund generations, that might make sense, because you cannot completely ignore the developments in the market. Again, history has shown that in our first fund back in 2011, We wrote average checks around 300,000 euros at 1.8 million pre-money valuation. And now 13 years after, in 2022 vintage, we are writing 1.2 million checks on 7 million valuation for the same stake of around 15% in those companies. So the whole market has grown 4x. So I think it's okay for a manager to, in these long cycles, go with the market, but I think one should not try to adapt a fund strategy within one fund generation.
Flexibility in portfolio construction is constrained by LP agreements. While some adaptability is beneficial, major deviations can harm future fundraisers and alert LPs, with results taking years to materialize.
I mean, basically, the model is written in the contracts that you sign with your LPs. A basis of this is the LPA, plus come investment strategy, investment directives that you in writing agree with your investors. And they set the course, what they expect you to do over the next 10 to 12 years. Obviously, every good contract leaves some room for flexibility, but being overly flexible and start meandering around from one season to the next, I don't think that is a good idea, because eventually you have agreed with something on something with your LPs. And if you start massively to deviate from this, you might have a hard time raising the next fund with the exact same LPs. I would not recommend to do it. The agreement you have with your LPs is the guidelines along which you shall deploy their capital, build the portfolio, and realize the gains. Of course, a manager is the GP, the general partner, and the investor is the LP, the limited partner. That limited, that means something. The GP is in control, he's on the driver's seat. Basically, the GP decides, but for some good reasons, he frequently has to check back in with his LPs. And if they come to the conclusion that the GP is starting doing unexpected things, that the GP deviates from the agreed development path, should make the LPs alert.
So far, we've explored with Daniel how fund size influences capital raising and performance, as well as the impact on strategy and operations and balancing expectations with scale. In the following part, we'll understand reserve ratio for seed funds and follow-on ratio as an output. Reserve ratios for seed funds usually range from 30% to 70%, with many opting for a 50-50 split. Optimizing this balance comes from experience, ensuring follow-on funding is reserved for the most promising companies as they advance.
Also here, this is absolutely important to see with the overall investment strategy and targeted portfolio construction stage and everything you invest in. So a good rule of thumb probably would be anything between a 30-70, 50-50, 70-30 split between initial and follow-on investment. There are some seed funds, and more so pre-seed funds, who only do initial because the funds are simply not large enough to put aside enough follow-on reserve and still have a sufficiently diversified portfolio. So this is also the availability of follow-on reserve is a function of, to a certain degree, of the fund size in AUM that you're managing. Below a certain threshold, and assuming you want to build a 20 plus company diversified portfolio, anything less than probably 25 million would not allow for a follow-on reserve. Then follow-on, in our case, we go by a rough rule of thumb, 50-50. Shall we end up building the portfolio with less capital requirements, then that what we would not spend on initial would be topped up on the follow-on reserve. So this is, to a good degree, result of a learning curve that you go through over time, and through every fund generation adds to this learning curve and set of expertise to now bring us to a rough 50-50 split. However, what's important to know for those follow-on reserves, you will only start deploying those when the first cohort starts raising their follow-on round. So for reasons of simplicity, take a 3-year investment period, cut it down by 3 equal thirds, cohort 1, 2, and 3, each consisting of a third of the portfolio count. In our case, Speedinvest, that would be roughly 30 companies per year. year one, year two, year three. So you start investing in year one. You over 12 months, between 1 and 3 initial investments per month. By end of year, you end up holding about 30 companies in the portfolio. Then you continue investing, starting cohort 2. If a company is on a fast trajectory path, they would, in current market environment, probably raise an A round in 2, maybe 2.5 years from start. So beginning of year 1, year 2, 1 year gone, year 3, another year gone. So by end of year 2 into year 3, the first cohort will start raising A rounds. And that overlaps with you building cohort 3 and end of cohort 2 and beginning of cohort 3. So you need to be very, very careful with that money. Typically with the initial investment that is planned to build the starting portfolio, the allocation requirements for the follow-on reserve must be much stricter. You really need to save this money for the really promising companies in your portfolio. That also means you have to take some not very nice decisions. That's simply the harsh truth. Not nice for everybody involved in the particular cases, but absolutely necessary. And the deployment for the follow-on reserve, you have to put in much more caution than with the initial portfolio.
The reserve ratio increases risk for seed funds as follow-on investments are larger, though later stage companies have reduced risk profiles. Seed funds expect higher loss ratios, around 60%, while later stage funds with more information on companies face lower losses and shorter investment cycles, often deploying all capital upfront without a reserve.
It gets more risky because typically the exposure in the follow-on is bigger than in the initial. Take a fund, cut it in half. Take the first half, buy into the starting portfolio. And unless you pursue the strategy that you follow on in every company, which in our case we not, we reduce the companies that we take part in follow-on rounds to a third, maybe even only a quarter of the starting portfolio, but with the same amount of money. So in that second ticket, we would deploy probably 3 to 4 times the money than we did in the first investment. So assuming the first ticket is on an average, probably 1 per 2 million, that would imply that the follow-on ticket is in the range of 3.5 to 5. That's significantly more than in the beginning. It's one stage later. The risk-reward profile, assuming the company is on an even trajectory, is reduced because there's less risk involved. Hence, the upside needs to be reduced as well. However, then again, in venture, you never know. Should one of these companies become a true outlier and be one of these famous 100x companies and eventually return the whole fund and build the backbone of your performance, then obviously you have done everything right. But true, when you deploy follow-on money, the risk exposure is actually increasing because simply in money terms, you have more money out on that single position. The big difference between early stage fund and later stage funds is one big difference is the difference in the loss ratio. We have very good relationship with growth funds from Series B and onwards. And while in our model, we calculate to write off 60% of our investments and another 20% to return an under critical performance attribution, this ratio completely flips with investing later than Series B. A good Series B fund probably calculates with a third loss ratio, so half of what we calculate. And even their loss ratio is not a complete write-off, but it's under critical money return. So I know many growth funds who have no follow-on reserve because they know the companies they choose and in their stage, and that's what is so different is in their stage, those companies are already known to the market. So there is possibility to research and analyze those companies without even directly being in touch with them because there is a lot more publicly available information. These funds can do the research way before they meet the company. This is also why they build or establish relationships to seed stage funds to ensure access to these potential investment targets. And with knowing so much more at the time of first investments, they can afford deploying most or all of the capital at the initial ticket. It results in shorter investment periods, in shorter return cycles, reduced upside, of course, but that all in all coming together, it could well be that the performance regarded in net IRR is similar to what a seed fund does.
You've been listening to Capital Conversations from IMD. That was part one of this episode with Daniel Kuiper-Noor. In our next episode, we'll have part two of our conversation, where we'll further explore key concepts such as graduation rates, recycling, and the theories of alpha and beta in venture capital. To find out more about IMD's courses, go to imd.org. We'll see you next time.